Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Mendel, I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Everything you want to talk about in terms of Giants football. We'll start with a guest today, and one of our frequent guests in the offseason. We figured it would be a good idea to bring him in, kind of give us a mid-season Giants report, Lance. One of our good friends from Pro Football Focus, Sam Monson. Sam joins us from across the pond. And, Sam, we were in your neck of the woods a couple weeks ago, and the Giants now 5-3 at the bye. Thank you for joining us, first of all. Where I want to start with you is this. Do you think the Giants' record properly reflects how well they've played this year? Because a lot of times teams will win some games that maybe they don't deserve. You look at the numbers and the stats and say, you know what, this team, maybe they're 500, but they're playing a little bit over their head. Do you think the Giants' record properly reflects what you guys have seen from them on film during the year?
I think they're in that kind of ballpark. Maybe they are a 500 team, but that's only one win above, you know, where they should be, if that's the case. I think they're components of this team that are playing well. There are components that aren't playing pretty well, and it's kind of shaking out to this middle of the pack team. But if you look throughout the league, that's most of the NFL at this point, is this kind of middle of the pack area, you know, not elite, not terrible, but just kind of in the middle along with everybody else. So I'd say they're in the right kind of area. Maybe they're one game or so above where I would expect them to be, but the right kind of deal.
Well, Sam, you alluded to there's some components working, there's some components not working. Let's start with the good things, and I think Landon Collins would likely be at the top of the list. You look at his numbers, they jump off the page. You look at his play on the field, everybody's taking notice. He leads the team in tackles, sacks, and interceptions, which is very rare for any NFL team. I mean, what has jumped out to you about Landon Collins, and in terms of his rankings, I mean, where do you put him with respect to other safeties in the NFL right now?
I think he's been completely reborn in this new position, moved towards the line of scrimmage, you know, taken out of that deep middle of the field kind of role. It's basically the same as what the Chiefs did with Eric Berry. When they tried to use him as a deep safety, a free safety, way away from the line of scrimmage, he just didn't fit his skill set. But as soon as they moved him towards the line, made him more of a strong safety, it just allows him to be more of a playmaker. And I think the same thing is true with Landon Collins, who has become the player that we thought he could be coming out of college, become this well-rounded player, not just a run-stuffing linebacker at the line of scrimmage, but you can play him in man coverage when you have him as the strong safety in the box. You can match him up with guys in shorter areas underneath, and he can do that and do it really well. But you just don't – he's just not best suited for that deep middle of the field roving role where you have to back up and play giant swathes of the field. So I think he's been fantastic this year. I think we have him as our number five safety just after Harrison Smith this year, but become a top five player from a guy last year who looked completely out of place.
And the guy next to him, I think a lot of Giant fans, Sam, thought that position would be a big issue, especially after Darian Thompson had the foot injury earlier in the year, and they've had to kind of mix and match. Nat Burhe was there after he had his concussion issues, and Andrew Adams stepped in, and he's played next to Collins. But you guys have been pretty impressed with the job Adams has done back there, huh?
Certainly this week, yeah. I think the last few weeks he's been okay, which, you know, in and of itself for a rookie free agent is impressive. It's an achievement. But then this week, we're about to release our team of the week in an hour or so, and he's going to be on the team of the week as
Wow.
one of our two
Wow.
safeties. He had an excellent performance this week. It was fantastic in both run defense and pass coverage. I mean, this week alone, you're looking at one of the best safeties in the NFL. So given that he hasn't had a bad game coming into this week, you're talking five games worth of pretty good play. That is impressive. If you can team that kind of play up with Landon Collins, and the rest of that secondary has been playing pretty well as well, that's suddenly a dramatically improved unit from a year ago, which is obviously what they needed given the investment they put into it.
Well, and that brings me to actually my next question, Sam. The fact that if you look at last season, they were at the bottom of the rankings overall defensively. They were aggressive in free agency. They brought in a lot of new faces. I know you just went over the secondary, but, you know, what other elements jump out to you about this defense as to why it's quickly turned around from the end of 2015 to now the first half of this season?
Well, obviously, they went big in free agency, brought in a lot of guys, spent a lot of money. And I don't know if anybody is necessarily justifying the amount it costs to bring them in, But all of the guys they have brought in are playing well. You know, Olivier Vernon's playing well. Jason Pierre-Paul is obviously an incumbent guy there, but is playing well after kind of readjusting to life post-injury. Damon Harrison has been fantastic against the run, maybe hasn't really brought anything as a pass rusher. Yeah, obviously, with the amount of money they were spending on him, maybe they thought that he could become more than a run-stuffing specialist, could actually bring something as a pass rusher. I don't think he ever will be able to, but he will probably be the best run-defending tackle in the NFL anytime you line him up there. And Janoris Jenkins has played well. He's a guy who was always a bit hit and miss, could potentially make some big plays, but could potentially give away some big plays as well. And he really hasn't so far this year. He's given away a couple of big ones, but everything else has been solid. He's yet to give away a touchdown, has two interceptions, seven passes defensed. He's only giving up a passer rating of 50-something into his coverage. So he's become, where he's playing like an excellent corner, teamed along with Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. You know, like I said, that entire secondary is kind of uplifted.
You know, Sam, and we're joined by Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus. And, Sam, people take a look at the sack numbers on the defensive line, just two apiece for JPP and Olivier Vernon, and they say, wow, you know what, with the investment in these guys, with their names and their ability and the expectations, that's pretty disappointing. But how do you guys, when you look a little bit further inside the tape, see from both JPP and Vernon on the field so far this year, how do you judge their performance, both as pass rushers and as run defenders?
Yeah, I mean, it is disappointing. It's a frustrating sack total for guys, but they're both getting a reasonable amount of pressure. You know, we look at both the sacks, we look at quarterback hits, we look at quarterback hurries. And if you move a quarterback off his spot, just that alone tends to have a demonstrable effect on his passer rating. It makes it drop 20 or so points. If you can hurry the guy, it typically drops the quarterback's rating by 30 points over a large period of time. So even if you're not able to get home and get the sack, you are having a positive effect on the defense by just hurrying the quarterback. And Olivier Vernon this year has 38 quarterback hurries. Jason Pierre-Paul has 36, I think. So the two guys are both getting a pretty decent amount of pressure, even if it hasn't yet converted into the sacks for either guy. And both players are extremely strong run defenders. You know, they're both stout at the point of attack. They're both strong, physical. We saw this week that Jason Pierre-Paul is one of those guys with the rare athleticism of being able to almost defend both parts of an option play. You know, he's able to press the running back and then break out and tackle the quarterback in a way not that many defenders are able to. So I think, you know, you may look at raw numbers and think that it's underwhelming for what these two guys are capable of, but I think overall both guys are playing well, if not spectacularly.
I want to touch on one other player in the defensive line, Sam, and that's Jonathan Hankins. You guys were really high on Hankins a couple years ago, but looking at some of the numbers going inside what you guys take a peek at film, you guys haven't been that impressed with his performance so far this year.
No, we really haven't, and we expected him to have potentially a big season given all the imports that have come into this team. I think part of it is being asked to do slightly different things now that Damon Harrison is on that defensive line, so he's being asked to become more of a pass-rushing threat, and it just hasn't really been there so far this year. Given how much he's rushed the passer, something like 260 snaps, he only has 13 total pressures, which is not the kind of return they're looking for that position. But, you know, we've seen quality play from him in the past, and it is in there if they can figure out a way to put him in the best positions to utilize that.
Yeah, Hankins had that breakout campaign in 2014, seven sacks, but then got hurt last season, so they were hoping that he could get back to that level. Staying on the defensive line, Sam, another interesting stat, specifically with respect to JPP and Olivier Vernon, is the amount of snaps that they've played in the first half of the season. And John and I have been talking about this on this program for a few weeks, how there's a huge disparity between those two versus the rest of the defensive ends in the National Football League. I'm curious, you know, from your years going over these numbers, how much of a concern is that for the Giants moving forward? And do you think that, because you pointed out, maybe they're not getting the sacks, but the quarterback hits are there, is the level of productivity sustainable at this rate if the number of snaps continue to increase?
Yeah, and it's not even just defensive ends. They have the number one and the number two total snaps of all edge rushers in the NFL by a reasonable distance. Jason Pierre-Paul certainly is like 40 snaps clear of any other edge rusher in the entire league. So these guys are being played almost every single snap they can get. And there have been teams that have done that in the past. The Minnesota Vikings used to very rarely take their guys off the field. When they had Jared Allen and Ray Edwards, those guys were playing pretty much every single snap. And you can get it done, and you can sustain a huge amount of pressure. And in a way, it's a bit of a double-edged sword in that you get more opportunities to rush the passer and to generate those pressures. But you probably do have a negative effect in terms of just being out there for so many snaps and not being fresh every single time you rush the passer. So it's a delicate balancing act, I think. At the moment, I'd say the Giants are at the high end of that. I think they're probably playing those guys too much, and those two players could certainly benefit from being spelled and getting some snaps on the bench to try and, you know, really make sure that they're at 100% when they do rush the passer. But in order to do that, you have to have players sitting on the bench that you trust to go out there and play those roles for the downs that you want to rotate them in. And I think that's part of the problem, is that the Giants just don't trust anybody else to go out there for any extended period of time and play the snaps that they're giving those two.
You know, Sam, the last few years, this is my final question on defense before we flip to the offensive side of the ball. Giant fans have been frustrated out of the lack of production from the linebacker position, but I think in general, they've been a little bit more satisfied with what they've seen out of some of their newcomers this year, Keenan Robinson for one, guys like that. What's your take and PFF's take on how the Giants linebackers have played so far this year?
In coverage in particular, I think they've been vastly improved. I think that there's still some work to be done against the run, but coverage, I think, is a good starting point given today's climate, the way offenses are. And Keenan Robinson in particular, I think, has been excellent in coverage. I think Devon Kennard has been good in coverage as well. So they've, I think, taken big step forward in that area. Kennard in particular has been really good against the run as well, but the other guys there, Shepard and Robinson and Casillas, I think they could use a bit more work in the run game, but part of that is offset by having those guys up front and, you know, Harrison, Pierre-Paul, and Vernon, who are all playing well against the run. It kind of balances out, and you can afford to have a bit more focus from the linebackers in coverage because they know that those guys up front are going to be doing such good work against the run.
Talking with Sam Monson, covers the NFL for Pro Football Focus. We're getting a midseason review about the New York Giants as the Giants get ready for Week 10 Monday Night Football with the Cincinnati Bengals. John mentioned fans are very interested in the linebackers. Well, the fans, Sam, are also very interested in the offensive line. As we move to the offensive side of the ball, it's been a big hot-button topic over the last few years, and you look at the first half of the season, pass protection's been strong. Eli Manning hasn't taken a lot of sacks. The running game, not necessarily the case. How would you evaluate this offensive line through the first 8 games of the season, and who specifically is probably playing its best football right now?
Yeah, it's been up and down, the offensive line. It's had good weeks, it's had bad weeks, and it's been good and bad against the run and the pass. I think it's another unit that's been dramatically improved from where it was. You know, a guy like Eric Flowers was a disaster last year, really, as a rookie with the injury that he was fighting through and his play at left tackle. He's been much better. I mean, he's not turned into one of the league's best left tackles overnight, but he's become a good player, a guy that you don't have to worry about anymore. Justin Pugh, I think, has been arguably the best guard in the entire league, has yet to give up a sack, has only given up 9 total pressures, and has been run-blocking better than he's been pass-blocking, if anything. And there's, you know, the only real weak link so far, I think, has been Bobby Hart, who has given up a lot of pressure and has struggled a bit. But overall, the unit is much better than it was, and it's giving them the kind of platform that they haven't had in previous seasons. I just don't think they're necessarily taking advantage of it enough yet.
So then tell me, from your watching of the Giants this year, Sam, what's going on with the running game? The Giants right now are at historic levels in terms of being unable to run the football in terms of Giants history. That's how poor they've been. What's your take on why the Giants running game is in the predicament that it's in?
I think Rashad Jennings just doesn't look like he can get it done anymore. He looks like a guy that hasn't got the physical ability that he used to have in the past, just looks slower, doesn't have the burst, the power to break these plays open. And a lot of plays, you know, they're not necessarily getting the holes. It's one thing when you've got guys that are, when you're dealing with run blocking, it's all about gap integrity. And you can have four guys on the line make their block, and if one guy screws it up, the play is dead. And that can happen with a different guy every single play. So the line can actually be doing okay, but it's still killing plays every single time. And part of that is what's going on with the Giants, but part of it, I think, is Paul Perkins needs to get on the field more. You know, he was late coming to the program with the graduation rules and kind of behind the eight ball in that regard, but they need to get that guy more touches. He's the one guy in that backfield that looks dynamic, that looks a threat to make things happen, and can kind of overcome some blocking issues and make guys miss on his own and turn negative plays into positive, and he just isn't getting on the field enough.
They certainly featured him a bit more in this last game, had 11 carries, including a 14-yard run, and head coach Ben McAdoo did certainly hint at the fact that as he improves, he could get more snaps in the second half of the season. I want to head back to the offensive line, which obviously goes hand-to-hand with the running game, Sam, and you mentioned that Justin Pugh is arguably the best guard in the National Football League right now, and coincidentally, he suffered an injury in their last contest, a sprained knee. He figures to be out a few weeks, so you know that's a pretty big void that the Giants are going to have to fill. They brought in Brett Jones, who was from the Canadian Football League, their backup center, their backup guard. Now, how do the Giants go about replacing him, and what, if anything, have you seen out of Brett Jones? I know he's had limited snaps, but, you know, can he help fill the void left behind by Pugh?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge void. Anytime you're talking about losing a guy who's arguably the best in the league at his position, it's a big problem. Even more so when you're talking about offensive linemen, when we know that there's such an offensive line problem in the National Football League at the moment. There just aren't that many quality guys to go around. And when you need to dip into the bench, typically you're dealing with some very substandard players. But so far, we've seen only good things from Brett Jones. He's graded well in the game time he has had. Like you said, it's limited snaps, so it's tough to tell how that's going to reflect because a lot of those snaps have been in the middle. But so far, it's been nothing but good stuff, nothing bad to report. No pressure at all in the 67 snaps he's been on the field. He's run blocked well. So we'll see. You know, so far he's done well. He's got an opportunity to step in there and prove he belongs, replacing one of the better guys in the league. But you would have to assume it's going to be some kind of downgrade.
Sam, standing where we are today, the Giants' passing game hasn't been nearly as explosive as it has been the last couple of years, especially if you take that Raven games out of the mix. They have not made a lot of big plays down the field. It's been inconsistent. They've had some fairly terrible games along the way. You go back to the Vikings game and the Packers game, Eli Manning did not play well in those two contests. When you take a look at the Giants' overall passing offense, their aerial attack, how do you judge it? Is this a receiver problem? Is it a line problem? Is it an Eli problem? How do you guys evaluate the Giants' offense through the air?
I think much of it is an Eli Manning problem, especially when he's been put under any kind of pressure. His play just falls to pieces, which is Eli Manning's always been such a frustrating quarterback because at his very best, you know, back in 2011 was one of the best seasons we've ever seen against a sustained amount of pressure. His performance when the heat was turned on that year was absolutely phenomenal. But then he's had years where it's been terrible. It looks like a completely different guy. And this season, anytime there's pressure involved, his completion percentage drops under 50%. His yards per attempt drops by a couple of yards, and the passer rating falls, and his grade, which is, you know, the important part from our point of view, because we're looking at those at each and every throw, and how often he's putting the ball in harm's way. I mean, that completely falls off a cliff. That becomes terrible. So he's putting the ball into harm's way a lot when he's been put under pressure, and when he isn't under pressure, he just isn't doing enough positive things with it. He's picking up the underneath stuff fine, but there isn't enough aggressive, deep down the field, high-impact plays when he has the opportunity of being kept clean in the pocket and having the time to go deep the way other quarterbacks are.
Sam, do you see opportunities down the field when you look at the coach's tape? Are guys open and he's not just making the throws, or are those plays not available down the field?
There's definitely opportunities where guys are open and, you know, the plays aren't being made. Certainly, Odell Beckham has been open pretty much all season. He's had a tough time getting the receptions a lot of the time. But, yeah, I think there's plays to be made, and Eli Manning just hasn't been hitting them.
Well, Sam, it's interesting because you mentioned that even when he's not necessarily seeing pressure, the efficiency isn't there as maybe it's been in years past. And, you know, one of the observations that we've always thrown out is in games when Eli Manning does get pressured, even at times when he's not feeling the pressure, maybe gets the sense that the pressure's coming, releases the football a little too quickly, gets a case of happy feet. From your analysis, are you sort of getting that type of observation from what you're seeing, even when he's not getting pressured, where maybe he's rushing things because he's sensing that the pressure is essentially going to be coming?
There's definitely a part of that. I think Eli Manning has always been one of those quarterbacks where even when there isn't any pressure, and even when he's not necessarily feeling pressure, he just looks a little bit skittish in the pocket. He always looks a little bit more uncomfortable than I think he probably should. But this is a guy who's getting rid of the ball pretty quickly. I mean, he has one of the quickest average time to release figures in the entire NFL. There's only four quarterbacks that are getting rid of the ball quicker than Eli Manning on average this year. And I don't think there's any reason for him to be that quick. You know, he's not being rushed to a dramatic extent by the offensive line to get the ball out.
You know, Sam, I want to kind of ask a follow-up question on what you just spoke about, how quickly Eli is getting rid of the ball. And we thank you very much again for the time. Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus. When you talk about Eli getting rid of the ball quickly, and you talk about how the Giants' offensive line is graded pretty well this year, how do you balance that, judging the offensive line play, even though, say, the quarterback's getting rid of the ball really quick? How do you take those two things into consideration when you build their grade? How much are they being helped by the fact that Eli's getting rid of the ball quick, and how do you balance those two facets?
Yeah, one of the things we look at when we look at pressure and how offensive lines are surrendering pressure is we look at how quickly and how severe the beat was. You know, did you give up a pressure immediately? Was the quarterback under duress under 2 seconds? That kind of thing.
Got it.
Or did you maintain a block for 4 seconds and really the quarterback kind of held onto the ball too long? And we also record something. We record blocks where a guy gets beaten, but when the ball comes out quickly, it never gets a chance to become pressure. So if you think of a left tackle, you know, he winds up face first in the dirt and the defensive end is closing on the quarterback, but the ball's gone and the quarterback never feels it, you know, never knows it's coming. So it's not pressure, but we'll record that as a beaten block and a bad play by the offensive lineman. So there's a lot of things in there that we try and fold in to account for things like that.
And, Sam, an extension of the offensive line is the tight end position, and the Giants have had three players that have gotten reps this season, Larry Donnell, Will Tye, and Jarrell Adams. Donnell was dealing with an injury last season. He got the starting job back earlier this year. Now it seems as if they're maybe going in the direction of more Will Tye and Jarrell Adams. If you could just give us an idea of how you've rated all three of these tight ends, and specifically from a blocking perspective, has there been improvement from specifically Donnell and Tye since Adams wasn't here last season? Are you seeing perhaps progress on that front?
If there has been progress, it's been minimal progress. I don't think either of those guys are still blocking particularly well. I just think there aren't that many guys in the NFL anymore that are quality blocking tight ends. You know, it's a tough job for those guys to have because they've got to be top quality pass catchers and they have to be essentially auxiliary offensive linemen when an offense needs them to. And it's a tough role, and there aren't that many guys that can do both bits of it. And teams will sacrifice the blocking. You know, if they know they've got a guy who is a quality receiver, they don't really mind anymore that he isn't a great blocker and he's going to get beat at the point of attack. The key, obviously, is getting the first bit nailed and getting a guy that can be consistently a top-quality receiver. But, yeah, so far the Giants haven't really found anyone that can consistently hold up at the point of attack and make an impact in those run-blocking plays.
We mentioned a couple members of the Giants' rookie class, specifically Paul Perkins and Andrew Adams we talked about. We haven't talked about the Giants' first two picks in the draft, Eli Apple and Sterling Shepard. How do you guys judge their performance so far this year, Sam?
I think Sterling Shepard has been okay. He's been pretty good. He's been he's had the same problem in terms of getting the ball his way as the rest of that offense, and it's, you know, he's being held back, I think, a little bit by Eli Manning. Eli Apple, I think, has been a bit up and down. He's been kind of the guy we expected coming out of college. He's pretty good in man coverage, and he will be tight and sticky to a receiver and tough to shake, but sometimes it'll cost him some plays where he's not really focusing too much on when the ball is arriving, and he can be beaten for a big play the way anybody can if they fail in man coverage. If you if you don't get the guy locked down when the ball arrives, suddenly a big play can become a huge play by a missed tackle or just by being a step late. So I think he's been okay. Certainly in terms of rookie cornerbacks, it's one of the toughest positions in the league to come in and succeed right away. So I think he's not done badly.
Has there been a difference in terms of play on the outside versus within the slot from not necessarily just Eli Apple, but from the overall secondary? Because they have been mixing and matching players overall here, Sam.
Yeah, they have. I think overall the secondary is massively improved in almost all areas. And they have been swapping guys in and out. And it's been a little bit hit and miss. They've given up some plays in the slot. But I think overall they've done a good job of manning that area and shutting it down and limiting what offenses are doing. I think Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie has shown that he can become he can play corner at any position on this defense. You know, he doesn't need to be limited to one spot. He can move wherever they need him to go. And guys like Landon Collins, have done a really good job in terms of manning up against guys in the slot or tight ends that are effectively slot weapons and can become this kind of man coverage matchup defensive back.
Final bigger picture question for me, Sam. As the Giants embark here on the second half of the season, right now they would be a playoff team if the season ended today. What do you think they really need to do in the second half of the year, taking into consideration now that Justin Pugh's going to miss, you know, 3-4 weeks, whatever it ends up being? What does this Giant team need to do to copy their first half success, go 5-3 in the second half, finish at 10-6, and I think you would imagine at 10-6 they got a pretty good chance at earning a playoff spot.
Yeah, well, as I said, the rest of the league is a huge match of nothing in particular in the middle. There's a bunch of teams at the start that are looking formidable. You know, Dallas looks a clear playoff team. Obviously, the Patriots at the top. There's a couple of teams at that end. But then there's just a whole load of teams that are all battling it out between mediocrity and playoffs. And it's just a case of trying to ensure you win enough games against those teams because they're all flawed. You know, all of these sides have problems and they all have things they do well, just like the Giants. The Giants just need to ensure that they, you know, hide enough of their problems and maximize enough of their positives when they come up against these teams that they end up with the winning record. Like you say, they don't need to do a huge amount. It's not like this is a team that needs to go on a massive run of wins. They just need to stay slightly ahead of the chains and keep on picking up enough wins.
Some great insight from Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus. Sam, greatly appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Sam does a fantastic job. So do the guys over at Pro Football Focus. We thank him for joining us. A loyal contributor to the program. Always jumps in and talks to us and really does a fantastic job in terms of giving us a little bit of insight. So you've heard enough of me and Lance. Lance and Paul covered the game yesterday. We'll obviously talk more about Giants-Eagles as we move forward. I'll give you some of my takes on the game. But we have callers that have been patiently waiting, so let's get right to them at 201-939-4513. Larry in Allentown, Pennsylvania has been holding the longest. Larry, thank you for joining us. How are you today?
Hey, good. How you guys doing?
Doing great, Larry. What's up, Larry?
Thanks. Hey, I just want to, you know, that was very informative program with Sam. Thank you very much. It's hard to swallow, his comments on Eli, even though that might very well be the truth. But as a fan, and you know, it's hard to swallow some of the fact that that might be Eli be causing of the problem. But it was very informative. So thank you. I'll be quick. I don't want to talk too much
tend
to do.
Go right ahead, Larry. It's okay.
Two quick questions. You know, we heard last week entering the Phillies game a lot about their wide nine defense, which that was the first I've heard in detail about that. Why are other defenses, unless they are, and I'm just not aware, why are there not other defenses employing that if it seems to be working that well and creates gaps and matchups would be my first question. And then I just wanted you guys to comment on Romeo Okoro. We seem to see a lot of the young guys coming in, and he's one that I haven't heard that much about, but seemed to be somebody who was around the ball a lot in when he does get opportunities. Those would be my two questions, please.
Well, first on the wide nine, there are positives and negatives to the wide nine defense. You know, if you're going to play that wide nine, which basically means you have your defense's ends lined up outside of the tight end's outside shoulder. So all the way at the end of the offensive formation. You do that to give them a better pass rushing angle to isolate them on the offensive tackles. Exactly. But here's your takeaway from that. If those guys are spread out that wide, what does it do? It leaves open running lanes by the tackles, by the guards, by the center. And if you're able to run the football against that, and if you look at the Eagles' defensive numbers, what's their weakest part of their defense? Their run defense.
Right.
And that's despite the fact they have a Pro Bowl caliber player like Fletcher Cox playing defensive tackle. It's because of their commitment to the pass rush and their willingness to sacrifice some things in the middle. So that's why it's not a universal thing that all teams do.
Yeah, they're hoping that they could stop the run en route to getting to the quarterback, or else then obviously they're going to have things that are going to come back to bite them in the middle of the field. So I think that, to me, the wide nine, Larry, has been more of actually a philosophy that's been, you know, intertwined with the Eagles going back decades, where, you know, that had been the philosophy of the team, and everybody who's come in has at least tweaked it or has adopted it. But it has not really become a NFL landscape-wide type of philosophy, because there's a lot of risk involved, and you also need to have the pass rushers to make that system work, too. If you don't have great edge rushers who you think can win the battles off the edge, it kind of defeats the purpose to be setting up that wide nine.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. That's a good answer. Thank you.
You got it. Not a problem. I know the other part of your question was with respect to, just remind me real quickly, Larry. I know
Romeo Okwara.
Correct.
Thank
you. Yes, thanks.
Your opinion on him?
Well, he made a big name for himself in the preseason, and we've seen that before with specific defensive linemen, but, you know, it doesn't necessarily always translate to the regular season, and I think it really goes back to the fact that, I mean, you can tell by the snaps, Spags wants to have his biggest playmakers on the field more often than not, and, you know, I just don't think the opportunities have been there for Okwara, and perhaps, you know, they're not necessarily seeing anything in practice that warrants taking off JPP, taking Vernon off the field to give him the opportunities. I mean, the same thing could be said for Double O as well, who's another young guy who they obviously think that there's some upside there in terms of maybe playing him on the inside or the outside. But, I mean, to me, I don't know if there's anything to read into it. I just think it's the fact that JPP and Vernon are their top two playmakers, and why take them off the field if you don't think you're going to get the same level of productivity at this point?
Yeah, I guess I was just asking also because, like Sam mentioned, they've been on the field, JPP and OV, more than any other DEs in the NFL, which I could understand you want your best players on the field, but somewhere along the line you would think you want to mix in to get them, you know, some longevity through the year, but certainly understand why you want your best guys on. It just seemed like you're right, in the preseason, he seemed like he was always around the ball, so I thought I was looking like a pretty prominent prospect, but that does make sense as well. Well, thank you, guys. That answers my questions. I appreciate your call always.
You got it, Larry.
Thank you, Larry. Appreciate
in.
The call.
I just want to bring up as a reference point, and this is not to revisit history, but, you know, every time I think of a player that flashed in the preseason, it didn't necessarily carry over to the regular season.
It's a long list, by the way.
It is, but I think of specifically, I'm going to bring up a player, Adewale Ojomo. Who,
that's a good
if you
one.
Remember, John, very good preseason. And I'm not saying that Okwara is the equivalent to that. Do not misinterpret my words. I'm just using this because I think what Larry brought up was an interesting question. And Ojomo, if you watch the preseason, you were like, wow, you know, this is going to be a guy that's going to provide some nice punch off the bench. It's going to provide some nice change of pace. And then the classroom stuff, the practice stuff didn't necessarily match the production that goes on in the preseason.
Right.
And you have to evaluate those things as to why these players are not getting on the field.
Well, then offensively, you go back. You had Washington, the wide receiver. You had Sonoris Moss, who's here for so long in big preseasons.
Yeah.
Keith Elias, if you want to go back to way back in the day, late 90s, where he had, you know, monster preseasons. It just, things don't translate necessarily. You know, it's like baseball. Don't trust what you see in April and September. Don't buy into a guy just because he's a good preseason. Same rules apply. They're going up against different competition. Okwara generally is not out there going up against first-team offensive tackles, so it's a different situation. Doesn't mean he doesn't have potential to become a good player down the road, but again, so far, it's been kind of a slow burn, and I think Sam brought up a good point. One of the reasons Spags is sticking with those starting defensive ends for so long is because he knows their level of play is high, that much higher than the backups, and frankly, we've seen Lance. When they take those starters off the field, I think especially to me, it's especially apparent in the running game how much easier teams run the football when Vernon, JPP, and Snacks, and Hankins to a lesser extent are not on the field.
I agree with you. Plus, I mean, let's also not forget, John, some of these players that we're talking about are also getting special teams reps. Right. I mean, JPP had the blocked field goal. Hankins had the blocked field goal. That's two of your four starting defensive linemen. So forget just the defensive snaps. You know, they want them to be on the field for special teams too, and they're delivering with those results. It's a balancing act. You need to take that into consideration, and that's why I think it was, you know, something to ask Sam, can they sustain this? He didn't seem overly concerned because other teams have done this, but
Not many.
And that's why I think, you know, it's something the coaching staff's going to have to take into consideration as they move forward, because the last thing you want to do is, you know, not have any gas in the tank for the stretch run at this point.
It's attrition.
Yeah.
It's health. It's all those things put together. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phones. Rod in Montclair. He's up next. Hi, Rodney.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Doing well. How are you, pal?
Hey, quick observation I had the last couple of years comparing to this year.
Sure.
With their running game, the last couple of years, we could run the ball a lot the last couple of years. But different to this year and last couple of years, we have no fullback on the team. I think a fullback will change the running game immensely. It will change it up a whole lot, because the safeties on the other team will have to respect the fact that you even thought that you're probably going to run the ball, so we'll just bring the safeties down, which opens up for the play-action plays.
You know, Rod, I think we saw that a little bit last week, too, when they brought in that extra offensive lineman earlier in the game, and I think it had a similar effect in which the safety had to come down a little bit, and that opened up that single high safety opportunity on the Beckham slant, which turned into a 30-something-yard touchdown. So, look, I think there's something to it. I like the versatility of having a fullback on the roster to give you the option of having the lead blocker, but remember, the Giants did have two players on the roster in the preseason that could play fullback, Nikita Whitlock and Will Johnson. Both guys had to get placed on IR.
Now, the one thing I will add to that, and I'll let you continue, Rod, what's also interesting with you bringing up the fullback, because you were referencing previous years, during that four-game stretch at the end of the season when they started to really run the ball consistently, now you can read into that and say maybe the level of competition wasn't as high, but Nikita Whitlock was being featured in those final four games, too, a bit more than he was earlier in the season.
I don't remember those snap counts. Let me look
that up. Maybe the numbers don't necessarily reflect that, but from what I recall, Whitlock also went hand-in-hand with that four-game surge.
Can actually check that.
I think it's a very valid point that when they have featured the fullback, they seem to have had success on the ground, and as we saw last week when they featured the extra offensive lineman. But, you know, right now, going back to your point, Rod, it's a matter of you just don't have a fullback option. It's not that they're not using the fullback. You don't have a healthy option right now, unfortunately, on this roster.
And, Zach, I know in the summertime they brought in a guy, Will Johnson.
Correct, from the Steelers.
And I know he got injured.
Yep.
But it's like they completely abandoned their position. And all through the years with Hanoski and all them straight out-form formations, right at the gut. Like, on the one-yard line, it's crazy we have to pass the ball. We should put an out-form, get a fullback in there, going right up the A-gap. But we can't do that. We have to pass. It's crazy, man. Nobody observed that we don't have a fullback on the team. I think we should go get somebody, anybody, any kind of fullback, get them on the team as soon as possible. I promise you, it'll change this whole running game completely around. Even so that the play action, I know Eli had a lot of good years of doing the play action. It's like, only thing is doing the slants now. And that's on the offense. On the defense-wise, the last play of the game with Jordan Matthews, you know, it's like as soon as they put in Trevor Wade into the game, these teams are going right after him. And I know they had to take out Eli Apple for a couple snaps they had to put Trevor Wade in. But it's like Trevor Wade, every time he's in the game, they're going right after him. And it wasn't Trevor Wade to deflect the ball to anything. Jordan Matthews blew right past him. He didn't even put his hand on him. He went right past him. But I guess the sun caught him. He couldn't make the catch.
Well, the throw wasn't great either, in fairness. I mean, Wentz put it a little too wide. You're right. If he throws a better pass, who knows how this game ends. But in fairness, Rod, to your point, if Trevin Wade's not in the game, let's say Eli Apple's in the game. If you're a quarterback, you're an offense, you're saying to yourself, we've got DRC, we've got Jenkins, we've got Eli Apple. Who are you going to target in those circumstances?
And who knows, maybe on that play, Eli Apple, who's been known to be a little bit grabby, what happens if he grabs Jordan Matthews or hold him in an offensive?
Yeah.
And look, that's obviously just, you know, guessing. Who knows what actually would have happened? You can't predict that. But the bottom line, and I know you look at the coverage, and was the coverage great? Was he on him like a blanket? No. There was an opportunity for him to make a play. No argument. But the bottom line is they didn't. So take what you can get.
But Not just this game. Not just this, it's like all the games. So this 7-31, they go right after them. All the teams do it.
You know, Ron, and honestly, I was surprised that before that game when they announced the inactives that they had Wade active over Leon Hall. That honestly was a surprise. And also Cody Sensabaugh was active over Leon Hall.
Correct. Well, Ben McAdoo was asked about that yesterday, and I know we were discussing this before the game, and what he
brought
up.
Thanks for the call, by the way, Rod.
Appreciate the phone call, Rod. Thanks so much for waiting.
Have a good one.
What Coach McAdoo brought up is the fact that special teams played a role in that.
It did,
and Wade contributes on special teams. Leon Hall doesn't. Now, he's playing his former team this week. I would think that Leon Hall may have a better chance to be active.
And
now, that
active,
shouldn't be the heavy lifting reason to play him.
But and it'll probably be one of the captains, too, because that's what Ben McAdoo has tried to do, is have some of the game captains be...
When you go up against your former team. So I would say, in all likelihood, he's probably going to be active for Monday night. But, you know, special teams, let's not at least forget about that.
Yeah.
Now that you have the safeties back healthy and so forth, it's a numbers game. And sometimes you got to make some tough decisions.
Let's go to LaVon down in Atlanta. LaVon, what's going on?
LaVon, if you could do us a favor, if you could turn your computer down, I think we are hearing that as feedback. Just talk right into the phone, and we'll be able to go back and forth here.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
We hear
loud
you
clear.
And clear. Now,
absolutely.
Now it sounds good, LaVon.
Perfect.
Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. How's things with you?
Great, but guess what? This is not LaVon.
Okay.
I'm not in Atlanta. This is Big Ed from Maryland.
Big
what's
Ed in
going
Maryland.
On, Big Ed?
Right, Big Ed.
How are you, bud?
Hey, guys, what's up?
Wow, that was
up,
a little
dramatic
appearance here.
Y'all, this, man. Y'all gonna love this.
What do you got?
Guys, I was at the game, and I tailgated that sucker the
LaVon,
whole
you're next,
game.
By the way.
That was awesome.
You were at the Eagles game,
what
you mean.
What a game, baby. What a game.
Well, then the Big Ed, I got a big question. I would expect you would have a pretty good variety of stuff to eat at the Big Ed tailgate. What were you guys rocking at the Big Ed tailgate?
Oh, my gosh, some of everything. I mean, just peas and rice.
Peas and rice. That's the first thing he lists.
Hamburgers, hot dogs.
Nice.
Oh, man.
Wow.
You name it, we had it, man. It was just awesome, man. Awesome.
Thanks for the invite, by the way. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and thanks for stopping by, too, by the way. Yeah.
Hey, look. I didn't have a ticket, so I couldn't come up there to see you guys.
Wait, so you came all the way up?
I saw y'all from the fence.
Hold on,
wait,
we got to clarify this.
Yeah.
You came all the way up just to tailgate for the game? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, boss. I had to try to do that, man.
Where'd you watch the game? Where'd you watch
the game? I watched the game right there. We watched it. We saw it.
Wait, where?
Did
you have
the parking lot?
Your car? Where the hell did you watch the game?
Yeah, we took a whole bus trip up, man. It was
awesome.
Okay. Okay.
Wow. So you had a little DirecTV hooked up out there? What did you do?
Oh, no, recommend center, man.
Oh, there you go.
Local.
Oh, yeah, little antenna action, old school. We like
wow,
it.
Wow.
How about that, Big Ed? You know what?
That is something. That's dedication.
I got
to
give you some props,
place, man.
We're
going to go to
that is, that is serious
Pittsburgh,
props.
Meet me in Pittsburgh.
All right,
Pittsburgh,
we'll be there. I'll be there, baby. Don't worry about that.
Wow. Comes all the way up.
That's credit,
tailgate.
Man.
Yeah,
that's
that
a
is,
hell of a job.
Yeah, man.
Kudos to you, Big Ed.
Number 5. Don't you get it? I'm finally coming breaking free, so are we. We're going to number 5. That's how it's going. We're going to Houston in February. It's going to be awesome.
Well, we never doubt the optimism shown by Big Ed on this program.
Well, Big
I will
Ed,
tell you that.
If you come down to Houston, I will tailgate you with you before the game.
As
Houston,
long as he brings
okay?
the peas and rice, though. Make
only
sure he
if he
the,
has the peas and rice.
Gotta bring the peas and rice, Big Ed. You had me at peas and rice. That's it. You had me there. All right, Big Ed.
Thanks.
Appreciate the phone call.
Man. Hey, guys, one quick thing for
you. Yeah, real quick.
Against the Bengals, man, that's going to be almost a shootout. We're going to have to play that ball deep, man, because, you know, AJ's going to run.
Yeah, I agree,
AJ's
Big Ed.
Run, and that boy Marvin Jones, he's good, too. So
well, Marvin remembers on the Lions. Marvin Jones is not in the mix anymore.
Take it back because they're more strong on the pass.
Over his head.
Strong, deep on the pass. You know AJ catches just about anything.
Yep. And you got Brandon LaFell, Tyler Boyd,
so
Tyler Eifert.
Shootout on our hands. You know O going to get his anyway. So here we go.
All right, Big Ed.
All right, Big Ed.
DJ Live, baby. We have a lot of fun. I might make it up.
All right.
Y'all at me, but yeah.
Sounds good.
Sounds
man.
Good, Big Ed.
Thanks
appreciate
for the call,
pal.
Good to hear from you as always.
Offensive clinic. He's
Marvin,
giving a little tease.
And you know what? I got to admit when I'm wrong. I said this last week. I thought that game against the Eagles would be a low-scoring slugfest.
Yeah.
Now, the Giants, in fairness, just to not to try to backtrack.
Well, remember,
a
the offense
here.
Capitalized off of 2 interceptions. It's not as if they had to go the length of the field. Not
well,
to take anything
that's where
away
I'm going
from
here.
That.
The Giants only had 302 yards of total offense.
Yeah.
Now, I was admittedly surprised. I did not think the Eagles would be able to put up 440 yards of offense against the Giants' defense. That surprised me. I thought the Giants' defense would contain Carson Wentz a little bit more, and I guess they looked at the same scouting report we did because they were trying to clog up all that short stuff, and Carson Wentz made him pay down the field a little bit. He made some big plays down the field in that game.
Well, I threw out that stat. I think I said it even yesterday. They only had 20 plays of 20 or more yards as an entire offense heading
second
into the game.
Second fewest in the league.
Second fewest. Mm-hmm. Tied for second fewest, and then they wind up with 5 plays through the air.
Yeah.
So they certainly took their chances. Bryce Treggs, their undrafted rookie who replaced Josh Huff. They
yes.
took some chances down the field with him.
Zach Ertz.
Yeah, both of those guys in particular who were relative. Yeah. Well, one was inactive for the first half of the season, and Ertz had been relatively quiet since the rib injury.
And I say, well, look out for Tyler Eifert this week. He's coming off an injury. He played in 2 games.
They got him going against the Redskins a little.
He barely played in the first game. He only had one catch.
But against Washington, he played a big
role. He had about 6 catches for 50 yards, 7 for 50, something like that. And he had a touchdown. Now he is a bye week to get even healthier.
Correct. Yeah, good point.
Look out for Tyler Eifert in this game. And by the way, AJ Green might be the best receiver in football right now.
Well,
he's right there with Julio and Odell and all those guys. He's right there.
No argument from me, John. From watching that London game, and I pointed this out on a mailbag that we'll put up a little bit later on Giants.com.
We hope so, at least.
Yes. A little inside joke there. I have not seen a wide receiver, and there's a lot of talent, that does a great job of sticking with his route. And what I mean by that, if the route ends and the ball comes his way, he doesn't just continue it. He follows the football and will come back towards it. He'll pursue the football unlike any other wide receiver that I've seen in the league right
now. And he'll run any route. He'll do slants. Yeah. He'll do ins. He'll do deep dig routes. He'll do flags. He'll do posts. He'll do outs. He'll do flies. He'll do every route in the route tree. He is an excellent, excellent receiver. You know what I like the most about him? Keeps his mouth shut.
Yeah, he just goes about his business. He
absolutely
can't complain about his.
You know, him and Julio Jones, both those guys really never say a word.
Same category.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're both great, great players. All right, we got 2 more calls. We got to get off a little bit before 1 o'clock here because we have the Ring of Honor conference call at 1 o'clock that me and Lance have to get on. So does our producer Matt. So we're going to stop a couple minutes early here, but we got 10 minutes. We got 2 calls. Let's go to LaVon down in Atlanta. LaVon, thank you for holding. Sorry for that false start penalty on us a second ago.
Nah, that's fine, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing great, LaVon.
Just wanted to comment on a few things Sam had talked about.
Sure.
I think Ereck Flowers is playing well. I've said it a few times when I've called, and he kind of backed up what I said. He's better than last year. He was hurt last year. He's better. And yesterday he played well. I don't remember hearing Connor Barwin's number called at all. So that's one thing. I can't blame Eli Manning for anything. He's looked uncomfortable since 2004. That's just how he is. But the running game, if it's better, the safeties come up, the linebackers come up, it opens up a lot more stuff. Rashad Jennings is not very good. He was a career backup before he came to the Giants. He had a good end of the season last year, but we haven't had a dynamic running attack since Bradshaw and Jacobs. And I think if Paul Perkins can get out there and maybe show us something that we don't have already, that'll improve the overall.
You know, LaVon, real quick, and I don't, you know me, sometimes I like to bring out the bucket of water. And I like to rain on parades. It's just what I do, and I'm going to have to do this right now. Paul Perkins in that game against the Eagles ran it 11 times with 32 yards. Included in that was a 14-yard run.
Minus that.
Which means on 10 carries, he had 18 yards.
Yeah.
So everybody slow your roll a little bit thinking that Paul Perkins is this just magic wand and, you know, super bean or pill that's going to cure everything, all right? It hasn't been that way so far.
Definitely. I'm not saying he's going to come in and turn into LeSean McCoy overnight.
That's fair.
But as a rookie, give him touches.
And that's
fine. Let him get used to his linemen. Let him get used to the league and how it is. A running game is rhythm, and a lot of times you're going to get maybe 1-2 yards, -3, -5, 14, 10, third and fourth quarter, you start to see those runs paying off. It's been like that for years with the Giants.
Right, and again, LaVon, the other thing, too, you got to commit to the run again. And that game, 36 passes and only 24 rushes. So, 22 rushes if you take out Eli Manning's 2 kneel downs, which I'm not going to count.
Yeah.
So that's, again, nearly a 65-35 split. And again, you're only rushing at 2 yards a clip, and that's one of the reasons you're not running it as much. But still, you got to commit to that running game. And like you said, give these running backs a chance to wear down the defense a little bit, then maybe make some plays in the fourth
plus
quarter.
Plus in a game that you're leading pretty much from start to finish,
too.
Yeah,
14-0 early.
So
I mean, that's prime position
more of a
to
reason
run the football.
Why you want to be able
and
to
you in a
football.
4-minute offense situation into the game, and you couldn't close it out.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember a few of those instances we had to lead, but it goes back to what I said about Jennings. I watch. It was a third and two, And I know Flowers and Pugh double-teamed the tackle, had him pushed back, and he could have cut it to the outside and took on a safety and got those 2 yards. A good running back takes on a safety and gets 2 yards. But he ran up the back of Flowers, and maybe it was Jones. I don't know if Pugh was hurt by this time. But that's when the defensive tackle that they had blocked grabbed his leg and kind of had it, and he got pushed back, and we didn't get the yards. So it goes – it's a lot of little things. I don't envy coaching in the NFL. It's hard to stick with something when you're not getting the results you need in a game, because a 14-point lead in the first quarter, that's nothing. I wasn't comfortable with that. We were beating the Redskins 21-7, and we lost it. So give me 14 points with 6 minutes to go, and maybe I'll take a breath.
Thank you, LaVon.
One thing I want to say.
Yeah, real quick. We got to go.
Eli Apple played terrible yesterday. That's why he got taken out for Trevin Wade. Trevin Wade is a 6-10 player, as Len put it once upon a time. But the reason Apple was out, he played terribly. He lost contain on one play, and he missed a wide-open tackle on another play with a guy. I think Aguilar got to the pylon.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to take him out. I don't know what was wrong with him, but they had to take him out. This week's going to be tough. Cincinnati's going to be ready. They had 2 weeks to prepare for us. They're desperate. They had that terrible game in London where they tied. They're 3-4-1. We need to be ready again. We need to go out there and put the speed on another team. That's good. Best offense we'll face all year. We got to get a win. That's
thanks, LaVon. Appreciate it.
Appreciate
all right, let's wrap it up. Joe in Pennsylvania, he's our final call. What's up, Joe?
Hey, I could talk to you for hours here on everything.
Well, you got 5 minutes, Joe, at most.
5 minutes. I'm calm, Lance, and everything.
Oh, that's good to hear.
It's been a long time coming, you know, so I am happy. You know, we didn't have no stupid penalties or anything like that. We played a hard game. That guest you had, he was pretty informative, but I'd like to see how he rated Eli in that game against the Eagles. I thought Eli was excellent.
No, I can tell you. I can look on the website. Go ahead, Joe. I'll look it up for you.
Yeah, I mean, he stepped up. He hit the rookie there, you know, and then he was knocked to the ground and that.
Well, really quick, their grade number doesn't really mean anything, but they had that as Eli Manning's second-best game of the year yesterday, his best game being against the Saints. They had the Eagles as his second best game so far this year.
Yeah, and he was talking about Eli Manning overall. Correct. Over the first half of the season. It wasn't really necessarily a reflection of this past game.
Yeah, I understand, and I think overall he's been excellent. You know, even like I was listening to the talk show on the Fan yesterday. They had Eli on there, and they talked to him. And there was a play where he just missed Beckham there, going down the sideline, and
down the right sideline. Yeah,
the Beckham there. The sun was in his eyes, and it took him a while to locate the ball, and he had to slow down on it. Or maybe he might have got that one in stride. You recall that play?
I remember that play. I was going to say it was down the right sideline.
And Eli slightly overthrew him. I was surprised Beckham didn't lay out for it and dive, but it would have been a really tough catch.
No, but he said he talked to Beckham about that, and his son was in his eyes, and he slowed down till he could locate the ball.
Okay, interesting.
So, I thought he played a great game. So, another thing, I know he is getting older there, and what it's our backup quarterback's last year under contract. I think it is a good year for quarterbacks or so. So I just, I want to keep Eli. I hope he can play along as Brady,
Well,
but I wouldn't mind
that'd
getting somebody night size, with some mobility, if we can get him in the draft, And did you see last night who was a star of the game for Seattle last night, one of our old defensive linemen?
Jimmy Graham? You talking about Demontre Moore?
The guy that was cut that was always
Demontre Moore, you're talking about.
Who?
Demontre Moore?
Yeah,
he just signed with Seattle. What did he do last night?
You know, they lost their center, and he was eating them up, He played a good game, And remember I talked to you a few days ago about penalties and being accountable. Well, they almost killed the kicker. How do you miss it?
Richard Sherman, I saw.
I don't know how they missed
that
one.
How do you miss that? And I heard them talking on the network that these refs, you're saying, well, we can't, but they have to be, come on and be accountable why they weren't called, or maybe it should go into their New York space or wherever.
Well,
it is
but
that
Joe,
they
Joe,
have
let me just
like
intertwine.
And Joe, we got to go. Thanks for the call, man. You can listen to our answer online.
I just wanted to say real quickly. I mean, Dean Blandino, the head of officiating, came out and said it was the wrong call.
That was about as quick as I've ever seen Dean Blandino tweet out saying, "Whoops."
Correct. So, I mean, when people say there's no accountability, I mean, I think people are watching, but I mean, what do you expect to do? Lock these guys up in jail?
Do you think Sherman gets suspended?
I don't think he'll get suspended for that.
To me, that is a dirty, dirty play.
I'd be very surprised if he got suspended.
If he, you know,
maybe fined, if anything.
He went for the guy's knees.
Yeah, but I don't think that warrants a suspension.
I'm not sure if he'll get suspended either, but I think he'll get fined.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets
fined.
That
to me is a very dirty play.
I also thought that the kicker, in fairness, did a nice acting job, too, to try to sell it there as well. But it was clearly a penalized play. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, Dolan dropped the shoulder into the poor kid's knees.
Well, sometimes I feel after you watch the replay 17 times, it looks a lot worse than it is.
I'll look at it again.
I don't think it was as dirty as perhaps many people are making it out to be.
But
it was certainly a flaggable play.
Right. And then
no
they screwed up
that.
The clock when they brought it back, too, which is a mistake. Real quick, because then we got to roll. I did this math real quick. Odell Beckham's catch percentage, receptions versus targets, 70% his first year, 61% last year, 55% this year. So they haven't been nearly as efficient in getting the ball to Odell this year as they have in the last couple, and went down last year too from his rookie year. Not surprisingly, that team started paying more attention to him and makes it tougher to get
him the ball. So forth, yeah.
Absolutely. All right, folks, thanks so much for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live for Lance Mendel. I'm John Schmelk. Make sure you stay tuned tomorrow. Paul Dottino will be here with somebody. It'll be me or Lance. We'll arm wrestle for it. We'll figure it out. So join us then at noon. And, of course, Giants getting ready to play the Bengals on Monday Night Football. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Have a good one.